Facebook.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia. We are diverse, independent, and yours.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Punks are known to have high levels of empathy and care. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Punk is love. It makes perfect sense then that punks often end up in the healthcare field. Sean Kathman is a nurse manager in a substance use disorder unit. After losing a friend in the punk scene to overdose, he launched a community-based initiative called Start Today. Start Today sets up at punk shows in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati to spread information about harm reduction. Sean believes that punk rock and harm reduction go hand in hand. Punk is about care and compassion. Punks have each other's backs. Healthcare, such as harm reduction, are an extension of that.
My name's Sean Kathman. I have been in punk rock and punk rock adjacent probably since I was 12, 13, somewhere in there. My older cousin took me to my first punk show, and I've never been the same since. I have played drums in a lot of different bands. I started playing out when I was about 14, 15, somewhere in there, and just been super delved into the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky scene for, I guess, a better part of 20 years or so. So currently what I do, I am a substance use disorder RN. I'm a nurse manager and I manage a unit of substance use disorder patients. Outside of that, I wanted to work on blending music and nursing and figuring out how to do that. So I started Start Today. Start Today is a collective. It's an initiative, community-based. We're mostly at music venues locally, so Southgate House Revival is like kind of our main hub for right now. I'm there tomorrow all day, so I'm there every single weekend handing out Narcan, education, test strips, condoms, you name it, we have it right now.
What's the reaction to what you're doing from the punks who go to the shows?
Super positive. So that was kind of my initial hesitancy, I guess. Being in this for so long and seeing all the different stages that music, culture, community does, there is a ton of stigma, and that's part of what we're trying to alleviate for folks. But luckily, none of that has happened. Everyone's been super positive, very cool. you know, I try to space like all of the shows out. So we'll do like local shows and we'll have a lot of good friends there. And then if a national act or regional is coming in, I'm also doing that. So for example, I did Leftover Crack and I kind of thought, what's that going to be like? That crowd was super responsive, as I had hoped. They have issues, and you know, likely the fans do too, so they were all really cool and grabbed a lot of stuff from us that night.
Do you have a history with substance use, your own past, or anything that happened to you that got you into this work to begin with?
Yeah, so my main thing that I talk about a lot is my buddy who passed away from a heroin overdose in 2013. At that time, I was in nursing school, kind of just floating around. I had ideas that I want to do psych and substance and that kind of stuff. Once that happened with him, that fully did it for me. I wanted to help people not feel the way that I did, and my friends and family and all that kind of stuff. So on the outside, that's how I've dealt with actual hard drugs and things like that. Personally, I'm an alcoholic. I stopped drinking almost 2 years ago with my wife, who also is part of Start Today. Navigating everything, it's very odd when you start drinking at like 12, 13, because you think that's what you're supposed to be doing, and then stopping pretty abruptly like mid-30s. So it's a long time. You kind of have to like figure everything back out. Like, it's very odd.
Yeah, and alcohol is so pervasive and so normalized.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about harm reduction. Well, how often do we go from that terminology straight to thinking about drinking an 18-pack of Coors while you're watching the football game kind of thing?
Sure.
Or binge drinking at a punk show, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
People, of course, are going to be very on board about making sure that people are using clean needles and have the access to things that aren't going to kill them. But then you're at a show where everybody's throwing beers in the air, right?
Yeah, it's been, honestly, every day is new. Like, it kind of seems like something I've noticed that amongst like harm reduction or like in this world, we're not talking about drinking like a ton as a whole. And I think that's kind of what gives us like an advantage or a leg up, that we're out here talking about that a lot, because there's a lot of people in that boat. Personally, we had a lot of stuff going on. I was a COVID nurse. My dad passed away. I was drinking much more than I had in the past. So putting all those things together, there's a lot of people that feel that way too. And I think when you're going to shows, it just feels super normal. That's what you're supposed to. I mean, I grew up listening to Alkaline Trio. Those guys were heroes of mine. They still are, but that was a thing for a teenager. Like, sweet, you just get super drunk and go to punk shows. That sounds sick.
Do you remember when it was that you maybe connected? Because you mentioned being into punk rock when you were quite young, mm-hmm. to wanting to take care of people. You know, punk rock has a lot of wanting to take care of people and protect each other and support each other. Do you remember a connection there between punk scene and maybe going into your line of work, being a nurse?
Yeah, totally. I talk about this a lot, like outside of these types of things, I'll get into conversations. The groundwork and the ethos of punk rock is healthcare, in my opinion. I mean, man, I was probably really young when I finally put that together. I was like 15, 16, noticing like, hey, if your buddy falls in the pit, pick him up. Anti-racism, anti-sexism, all these things play into just being a good person. And I think that connection is there. I love when I find other alternative, in quotes, you know, healthcare workers, because I think those are the people that really get it. And I think that that's something that I've always tried to be a change or a face of change, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because there's always that one or two people in a hospital that have tattoos and you
right.
look really tough, but of course they're doing mm-hmm. the most sensitive or empathic job of being a counselor or being a nurse. It's always good to see.
Totally. I think that I'm just a natural person to walk up to and talk to, especially at shows. now they're engaged, I can spread this information, I can keep everybody safe, while also just being like someone easy to talk to.
How much of the work that you've done towards the harm reduction and even starting Start Today has been in honor of your friend that overdosed? I see that as almost being like a seed inside of you that had to germinate and ignite to be able to do that work. And unfortunately, it came with a really tragic event.
Right. I mean, a couple things we do, like I have a printout that I made of him, just a really cool picture of him playing bass. He played in a bunch of crust punk bands and a bunch of rock and roll bands and stuff. So he was really moderately known within the Cincinnati scene and stuff. So I took like a notable picture of him, printed that out, made it look really nice. And I put that on our table for every show, kind of like it's him being there. We just did Laura Jane Grace last week. And that was a very prominent part of our table because I know that that was something he was into. It was against me and all those types of things. So I try to connect music and a lot of different ideas that way.
Yeah, and it's all revolving, like Laura having a lot of substance use issues
totally. In
her past, and it's one of those things that she talks about in her book, that huge struggle that she had all those years, and it's not just the people watching the bands, it's the bands themselves, and a lot of musicians have those kinds of issues, but I think within punk rock, there's more of a struggle and an overcoming of those things, more so than in a lot of styles of music, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think it's, you know, mostly stylistic from like the 70s and 80s is like you see Sex Pistols, those bands grew up seeing them. Now we got, I don't know, like Dead Boys is a big one for me too. I'm like, wow, that's so cool. And then it's just a cycle. And, you know, you don't realize you're in a cycle until you step out. And I think that's what's been really interesting about this and being able to connect with these artists. Like Laura was super cool. The whole band was really cool with this. And I was really touched by what we're doing because I think there's not enough of this.
So for myself, living with bipolar, I don't like to use the word disorder. It just makes me feel kind of icky and treaded down upon in some ways. You know, I want to be owning my condition. I don't want to be told that I'm ill or sick from other people who don't understand the condition, don't understand my version of the condition.
Sure.
With substance use disorder, how do you feel about that word in that particular condition?
So I think it's how you spin the word, honestly. There are horrendous words that I will not use to describe a lot of these people. And I think as long as we're giving like person with substance or substance use disorder, like putting word before helps, I think we've come a long way. I don't know if necessarily that's the way people are going to say these words or terms over the next 10, 20 years, but I think we're on the right path.
Yeah, people first language.
Yeah.
A lot of hospitals now have addictions, substance use. Addictions is another word I don't like using, but a lot of hospitals have substance use and mental health blended together in one ward usually or one service. I think a lot of people now know that there's a huge connection between the two, but in the past, it hasn't seemed to been something that people really got. And I'm wondering what your feelings are on that and the connection between the two.
Well, I think they certainly are connected. When we start talking like hospital logistics and healthcare logistics, it's going to come down to like state funding and those types of things. Personally, I don't love both of them blended together because that's not necessarily it. I just had a conversation with a patient this week that went to a place that was like everything, and that's not what he needed. You need specific things, but I don't know. I think a lot of it is for a patient or for a person, it's an eye-opening situation to be placed in somewhere like that because maybe I don't have it so bad, or wow, that person does the same thing. I'm going to bond on that and can create connections. So it kind of just depends on, you know, the facility, in my opinion, though.
One of the things that I found was weird is that to say that substance use disorder is under the umbrella of mental health, for instance. So like for me, bipolar is under that umbrella because it's a diagnosis of mental health. But for me, the substance use is so much, they kind of feed each other. And I don't see that as being a diagnosis as much as being, this is a separate issue, almost like a snake eating its tail. You have mental health issues because you are having substance use issues and vice versa.
I would agree. I think it's, you know, chicken and the egg like situation too is like, did the alcohol and heroin come first, or were their voices first, or it's hard to pinpoint. I think that's like our biggest obstacle with anything like mental health, behavioral health, substance, any of those things. I think it's really, really hard to pinpoint unless you have a super clear history of what's going on. And that's not always the case when assessing, really.
How did you get into the healthcare field?
Well, it's kind of weird. So
let's do it. Let's be weird.
Let's go. So I come from like a whole healthcare family. So my mom's a pharmacist. Her dad was a pharmacist. My dad was a nurse. I'm the oldest of four. My sister's a social worker. My brother's a nurse. My sister is a pharmacy tech. Lots of doctors and nurses throughout my families. Never struck me odd to not. But personally, why I was like, okay, I guess I'll do this, was I was playing in a lot of different bands. The one band I was in was getting pretty big, and some of the guys left. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just go to nursing school. That's how it happened for me, which is kind of weird. Like, music didn't super work out, so I went and became a nurse.
What kind of stories are you hearing from people at the booths? What are some of the people at the shows telling you? How is substance use affecting their lives?
So a lot of what we'll get, you know, because it's loud. So a lot of our breaks we can hear super well, but a lot of the time it's someone coming up, like just a few weeks ago, I don't remember what show we're at, but someone came up and they're like, I've been 9 years sober. Seeing this kind of stuff is great. Like, just thank you guys. Like, and we get a lot of thank yous and things like that. A lot of in current recovery or thinking about recovery, a lot of conversations regarding that. A lot of my peers come up to me, and I mean, I was a big drinker, man. And a lot of people were super surprised when I had stopped. So a lot for me is kind of giving that guidance and tips and things along the way with that.
When people do come up and give you their stories, has there been a time when, you know, you felt like there was a breakthrough, or that are you seeing that even just having someone to talk to and to listen is making a difference?
Oh, absolutely. I think just a lot of what we'll get to is my so-and-so passed away from an overdose. So we're connecting with that. I think just being there for people is what's most important, because you don't expect to go to a show and have those types of emotions evoked sometimes. And I think that just being able to have the release is amazing. I wish I was doing something like this when I was like 16, or I saw this, I probably would have had a whole different life. So I look at it that way. I don't know if it's necessarily doing something acute, but I think long-term it's doing something.
It's kind of a flip side to the work you're doing as a nurse, you know, that I'm assuming that would be very intense. And this is more maybe taking a bit of a breath, but still doing the same type of messaging.
Yeah. Having a lot of the same types of conversations, a lot of education, and making people, you know, a big thing within healthcare is knowing both sides of something. So like a risk versus benefit situation. We're doing a lot of that. And I think it's really cool too, that like the volunteers that we have are also on the understanding of that. Like, not all of them are healthcare. They're just people that want to help, and they're able to watch me interact and then however do that themselves. It's super rewarding.
At what stage in this idea or organization, that this work at the shows, was the getting clean, like for you and your partner, like, was it before it started, during the process?
So it was like maybe 9 months in, because I had been feeling like really weird going to shows. I wasn't playing in bands. I didn't have anything to do outside of work that I could put time into. I had worked with some other organizations and I had done like Narcan distribution locally, but I was just thinking how to make those two things together, or all of this together. So it was like somewhere halfway through. And it's been very helpful for me, because gives me something to do at a show, doesn't let me focus on drinking. Leading by example a lot is very cool. It's kind of showing that like anybody can do something that we're doing, or someone can get clean just like we did, I think is really the cool part of it.
For sure. What kind of efforts do you need to make in order to branch out with this into the festivals and maybe other parts of the country? Is there an idea of maybe having other people in different cities doing it, or?
Yeah, so we've talked about like doing separate chapters almost. I really want to get us like very, very tight locally and then kind of like expand. Something like kind of interesting we've been doing is I make these little to-go boxes and give those to my friends that are on tour and stuff. So we have all these different boxes in several different parts of the United States, which definitely helps, but I want to be able to reel it all in somehow.
How do you take care of yourself when you're doing this kind of work? It sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. I try to like put everything into blocks. That's just how my brain works. So today, for example, right before I got here, I just met with our local library and setting some things up and events with them. But now I have the rest of the day free. So I'll just chill, maybe play some drums, pet the dogs.
One of the things that I have a hard time with is I really love putting on shows. I've always done that since I was new to the scene. And
yeah,
but then I don't get to see as many bands as I would like to see.
Right. Yeah, I did some booking too. And that's definitely the negative side is like, oh, well, I'm stuck here or now I'm just exhausted. I don't even care. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, or standing behind a booth.
Totally, yeah.
What do you think it is about your upbringing and you've gone through the loss of a friend from overdose? What is it about you as a person that makes you do this kind of work?
I don't know. It's a hard question. I've always been very empathetic as a child, very emotional. I'm pretty in tune with that kind of stuff. And I feel like just seeing the cool work that my dad had done as a nurse, that's something that's kind of odd too, is like, there's not a lot of like males in nursing, but I never had that ideology because my dad was a nurse. So he was a big influence on becoming this and doing all these things. He had started several programs in the community, very well respected, cool nurse guy. And I just thought that was really neat. And here I am.
What is it about being a punk that has led you to this kind of work?
Well, I think it's having a really good understanding of what is actually right and what's wrong. I think that is fundamentally punk, to be educated and burn things down from the inside is a lot of how a lot of my things work. So if we're out here handing out free stuff and the government is saying no, I think that that's what I'm about. Figuring out how to keep everyone safe despite negativity surrounding those things.
And being a nurse, what kind of punk ethics have you brought to that?
So I'll describe it as punk. So like, I think just being like on the psych side of things, you're already like the weirdo within healthcare community. So I helped start, it's a behavioral assessment response team. So if anyone throughout the hospital is having a panic attack, agitated, combative, I'm the one that responds. I mean, that's what I really like, is being able to just de-escalate situations and really like figuring out what the actual problem here is. Because 9 times out of 10, it's something that someone else could have done. They just were not listening. So I think that's punk.
It's like giving someone a bear hug in the pit when they're getting a little bit
totally
too excited.
Yeah, you got to chill, man. Let's figure it out.
What's been the best show that you've seen with that kind of a spirit to it? Not when you've been behind the booth, but when you've actually been part of it.
I would say growing up, something that was very formative was seeing like Silverstein. They were out there really pushing like the posi-core stuff, even though they weren't necessarily posi-core, but they had a lot of those ethos that they're like one of the first bands that I can think of I heard. And I was like, wow, that's so cool that pick your buddy up. Nobody's illegal. Those types of ideologies was really helpful in your formative teenage years, for sure. I think that kind of structures you.
What's next for you?
I don't know. I just want to help as many people as possible and listen to punk and emo. Like, that's my thing.
That was my conversation with Sean Kathman of Start Today Harm Reduction, starttodayharmreduction.org. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Clahoman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
Hi, this is Towers, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC. Diverse, independent, yours.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
Bird Note. True to their name, greater yellowlegs are shorebirds with bright yellow legs and feet. Ever wonder why? Perhaps it's so they can see them better. Wading in shallow water to capture small fish and insects, a yellowlegs can keep track of its legs by their bright color contrasting with the sometimes dark and irregular bottom. Keeping track of toes allows quick movements without a misstep. A sanderling, on the other hand, has black legs and feet. Running up the sandy beach in front of an advancing wave, it too is aware of every step, as those black toes stand out against the pale sand. It turns out that shorebirds that forage on dark substrates, such as mudflats, usually have pale legs, while those on paler substrates, such as sand beaches, have dark legs. Mother Nature is good with the fine details. How about the brilliant orange legs of ruddy turnstones? Well, they forage just about anywhere on the shore, and those orange legs stand out like a neon light. Black-necked stilts have bright pink legs, and like yellow legs, they wade in water, where one bright color is probably as good as another. See photos of all of these birds and get a look at those legs when you come to our website, birdnote.org. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
Do you know what